Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, buenos dias, buenas tardes, hello, thank you for being in Business 123 Introduction to Investments Spring 2003. We are so grateful and glad you are with us. And we're also grateful that you're actually hearing my voice. And or, seeing the presentation in front of you, because it means you've got the technology working. Maybe you're watching it on your computer at home or listening to it on an MP3 player, or if you have an Apple mobile device, maybe you figured out how to make your way to iTunes University and are watching this now. Great. Welcome. We are so, so grateful for your interest and for you being here. Now, let me introduce myself. My name is Frank Baiano Italiano. You know, Frank is good enough if you want to call me that. Paco, Paquito, my students at San Isidro would not call me Frank, but they felt a little bit more comfortable calling me Paco or Señor Paco. So, I've been teaching here for a long, long time at Southwestern, and I'm doing my best to move into the future by teaching online, and I hope you will bear with me. I'm still learning, but I think at least I've had some good comments from some of my students about these online presentations, that they really help them. When I first started teaching online, I just threw the presentation up on the website and said, here, have at it. And the students said, it's more boring than reading a presentation, having somebody recite it to you. No, not actually. It seems to be very popular. So please do listen to these presentations. Why? Because they can be listened to when you're going to and from work or to and from school or exercising or whatever. So I do hope you'll find them useful. Okay, let's get started. Oh, by the way, to see a more in-depth introduction of me to you, check out the discussion boards, and that's your first assignment, actually, is to go on the discussion boards and announce your intention of staying in this class, because we have far more students who want to take online classes than we have online classes available. So there's a huge waiting list of students. If you find that this is not for you, please contact me immediately. We will allow somebody else to enter the class. Great? Okay. Welcome, everyone. Let's get started. And we start with a perspective. It is a gloomy moment in history. Never has the future seemed so dark and incalculable. The United States is beset with racial, industrial, and commercial chaos drifting we know not where. Of our troubles, no one can see the end. Did you see this on the news last night? Skunk News? I'm sorry, Weasel News? Fox News, yeah, Fox News. When you ask people when this quote was written or spoken, they often will say 1930s, Great Depression, 1940s, World War II. Not quite. It was actually written in Harper's Magazine in 1847. Yeah, right, 1847, folks. What was going on in the 1840s? Well, the Industrial Revolution was starting to take hold, the steam engine, the locomotive. And what else was going? Well, right, the nation was about ready to tear itself apart with the Civil War. Did they have serious problems in 1847? Oh, yeah. Do we have serious problems now? Oh, you better believe we do. But serious does not always equate to fatal. Given all the craziness that's happened over in this country's 220-some-odd-year lifespan, we've still managed to prosper and survive. So I will accentuate the positive, as the song goes. we won't be downplaying our problems. We have serious problems, but we'll always have serious problems. And it turns out that by accentuating the positive, by being optimistic, not only do the studies show you're a happier person, but you've also made a whole lot more money than the people who are pessimistic. Doesn't guarantee anything for the future, as we will say so many times this semester, but it's a good sign, I think. So, let's get started. Slide number 3. We call it chapter 1, but really what I've done is try to create what I believe would be the contents of a first chapter of an introduction to investments book. Our book is very good, don't get me wrong. It's a little dry, but then most textbooks are. But they concentrate in chapter 1 on the history of risk and return, which is very important, folks. It sets the tone for the entire class. But they leave until chapter 3 a discussion of different types of securities, different types of financial investments. And I think that's unfortunate. Plus, they don't do a very good job in chapter 3. Why? Because they go into too much detail. In my humble opinion, that's my opinion, you may say, oh, no, I like the detail. But most people, I find, are already very nervous about taking an introduction to investments class. They've been bewildered and befuddled by the financial media and or one of their friends who starts talking about calls and puts, and they think they're talking about telephone calls, and I don't know what they mean when they say put. But anyway, we are going to start from the very beginning. So our overview of security types, our overview of financial investments, will be very cursory. So to speak, we will be flying at 40,000 feet, looking down upon the landscape. And then, at the very end of this chapter, we will discuss short-term investments. The book doesn't really discuss these in detail. Why? Because they're not that important, and we will dispatch with them quickly. Okay, so that's our chapter 1. I sometimes call it section 1. Let's take a look at J. Kenfield Morley's timeless quote. Because this sums up the entire semester, folks. In investing money, the amount of interest you want should depend upon whether you want to eat well or sleep well. Oh, boy, did he have it all figured out. Now, I wouldn't have used the word interest. I would have used the word reward or return, because investment rewards come in different flavors than just interest. I mean, interest, you get paid from bonds and you get paid from savings accounts and other short-term investments, but we also can get rent and dividends and capital gains. So there are other forms of rewards. But be that as it may, he really nails he really hits the nail right on the head with his hammer here, and he pinpoints the idea of risk versus return, risk versus reward. Do you want to eat well? Well, that means you're going to have to take some risks, and it means that things might not turn out the way you had hoped they would turn out. Or do you want to sleep well? Well, if you want to sleep well with your investments, it means that you're not really going to make a whole lot of money over the long term, maybe even over the short term, especially now. But at least you'll be able to sleep at night knowing that you're not going to lose half your investment in a matter of weeks or months or years. So, remember that quote, and we'll come back to it. So we start from the very beginning, folks. Slide number 4. With what is an investment? I mean, really, right? It's an introduction to investments class. Remember that. Introduction to investments. An investment is any vehicle into which resources can be placed with the expectation that it will generate positive income sometimes called cash flows, or that its value will be preserved or increased, capital gains, or both. So you understand that? Whenever we take a look at any type of vehicle, we want to ask ourselves, is this going to generate income for us? Will it hold its value? Will its value be increased? Will it do both? And we call the rewards investment returns. And some people call them investment rewards, but we'll normally use the term returns. And they come in the form of income, interest, dividends, rent from real estate, other, all the, AKA stands for also known as cash flows. Right, what money is coming in from our investment. And then increased value or decreased value, and this is what people tend to concentrate on when they take a look at investments. Capital gains, capital appreciation. Yippee! Our stock has gone up. Our rental property has gone up. Our gold has gone up. But we can also face capital losses. Yeah. Investments come in all shapes, flavors, and sizes. So, for the rest of this first session of our first chapter, we are going to discuss the different shapes, sizes, and flavors. Remember, this is an introduction to investments class. Don't worry if you don't know everything there is about what we're talking about. What is important is what is in this presentation. Slide number 5. What are the various types of investments? Well, there are two major types of investments that people love to talk about. Securities and property. There is a third type, which is very important, and yet we don't really talk about that much, but oh boy, is it important, and those are personal investments. What are securities? Well, it's a bad name. Does it really make any sense, folks? Securities? And in fact, we used to call this class investments and securities, and people would say, well, I'm not an administration of justice major. I don't need to know about security. No, not that type of security, folks. A security is an investment that represents debt or ownership or the legal right to acquire or sell an ownership interest. Huh? Yeah, later. But a better term is financial investments. When you hear the term securities, people are usually in the industry who use that term, and they're talking about all the different types of financial investments, which include stocks and bonds and mutual funds and options and futures and different types of more exotic financial investments. So you gotta learn, you must learn this term. You need to understand securities. In fact, we call it the Securities and Exchange Commission, right? The securities, and then where are the securities sold? Those are the exchanges. So remember, securities means financial investments. And that's the bulk of what we do in this class. The next major type of investment is property. And we talk about real property. Is there imaginary property? No, that's not what it means. Real property is anything that's attached to the ground, or is the ground, right? So a building is attached to the ground. It is real property. And sometimes we call it real estate, right? And then personal property, such as motor cars. People invest in cars. It's a tricky business, but some people have made a lot of money in the cars. Precious metals, collectibles, art. So they go by various names: hard assets, tangible assets, commodities, and we'll spend a little bit of time on these near the end of the semester. And then the third type is personal. Education, folks. College is often the best investment a person will ever make. Why? Well, we said that investment is anything that can generate future income, right? And most of the time, it's not always true, but the more education you have, the better equipped you are to earn more money over your career. It's not a guarantee, but it's in general true. Plus, not only do we want to concentrate on the money making ability of going to college and education and travel, but it also makes us a better person. It makes us a more, not necessarily in some cases, but it makes us a more well-rounded. It broadens our horizons, so to speak, and makes us a better citizen of the country, of our neighborhood, and of the world. And as we said, we're going to concentrate on securities in this class. Slide number 6. Now, we also can categorize investments whether they are primary or whether they are derivatives, derivative assets. Now, primary assets fall into two different categories: debt, where we lend our money to somebody else. You see, we're used to thinking of a loan as a problem, right? We borrowed that money, we got to pay it back. But think about it from the lender's point of view. That debt is an asset. That is their investment. The bank lends you the money. Well, that's on their books as an asset. The banks are very strange. Everything is turned around. We're used to owing money. They lend it out. And you can do the same. You can lend your money in exchange for interest income and promised repayment of the loan at a future given date. And we're going to spend about 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks on bonds. They're a very, very important type of debt investment. Short-term investments, savings accounts, as we said, we'll spend 1 day on these things. Now, what about equity? Well, that's where all the excitement is, isn't it? Ownership in a business or a property. And those are stocks, corporations, investments in partial ownership of a corporation, partnerships, sole proprietorships. If you've taken or you're going to take Business 120, you'll learn all about different types of businesses. Real estate. A real estate investment trust, and we'll discuss these near the end of the semester. Now, this next category is a little tricky because at first blush you think, what are you doing here? Derivatives are securities that derive their value from an underlying security or asset. Huh? You're not investing in the underlying security or the asset? No. You are buying the right to buy a security or asset. It doesn't make any sense. Look, folks, I don't want you to fret over options and futures, especially because in Chapter 3, the book goes into very much detail on these things, and I really think that's a bad mistake. We will discuss these at the end of the semester in detail. For now, all you need to know is that there are several examples, two of which are options and futures, and that these securities derive their value from something else. They derive their value from another asset. They're very dangerous, folks. In fact, some people in the industry do not classify derivatives as investments. Why? Because if you go back to the first definition of an investment is something that has a reasonable expectation of generating income and holding its value or going up in value. And when you look at these things closely, they generate no income, and there's about a better than even chance, in fact, it's about 60-some percent, of these things becoming worthless. So that's not an investment, folks. They're called speculations. You see, we don't use the term gambling when we were in the financial world. Oh, no. This isn't gambling. This is speculating. Well, whenever you see the word speculation, you replace it with the word gambling, all right? Because that's what it is, as far as I'm concerned. And then, of course, you're going to hear differently from other people who say, oh, no, they're a useful tool in the investor's arsenal. As far as I'm concerned. But all you need to know is what you see right there. They derive their value from an underlying security or asset, and two examples include options and futures. Now, slide number 7. We further categorize investments by whether or not they are a direct investment or are they an indirect investment. And a direct investment, Your name is on the investment. You control the investment. You can buy or sell the investment as you see fit. Real estate, if you buy a property, your name is on the title down at the county courthouse. A stock, a bond, your name is on the account. It used to be your name was on the stock or bond, but that's when they were in paper format. They don't do that anymore. It's all electronic. Now, what are indirect investments? Well, you're investing in something where somebody else is in control of the investment. You have limited control, or more likely, no control over the underlying investment. So the biggest example of this is a mutual fund. When you buy a mutual fund, somebody else decides which stocks, which bonds. When you buy a real estate investment trust, also referred to as a REIT, I love that word, REIT, somebody else is buying the real estate and managing it for your benefit. You know, you get the benefits if the price of the real estate goes up and any rent that goes up. And then limited partnerships. You're a limited partner, which means you basically keep your mouth shut, and the general partner or partners, they actually manage the investment. So don't get confused here. It's not that you have no control whatsoever. You can buy and sell your shares in the mutual fund, your shares in the REIT at any time, but you can't call up the real estate investment trust and say, hey, there's a property down at the corner that's for sale. I think you ought to buy it. They'll say, oh, thank you very much for your input, and then quickly say, we got a live one here. So you understand direct versus indirect. Slide number 8. Now, we further categorize investments based on where they are domiciled, their domesticity. And this used to be an important part of investing. But not so much anymore, folks. Why? Because the world is global. But it's still an important distinction that you need to know. There are 3 categories. Domestic, based inside the United States. International, sometimes called foreign, also called foreign, also known as, but you don't hear that much anymore. It's usually you hear international. These are companies or investments that are based outside the United States. And then global is everybody, todo el mundo, all the world, outside the United States and inside the United States. So be careful of this subtle distinction. Why? Because you're going to see 2 mutual funds, an international mutual fund and a global mutual fund, and you go, what's the difference? International means global, doesn't it? No, not in the financial world. So make sure you remember this subtle distinction. International means outside the United States. Global means everybody, including the United States. And, of course, domestic means companies that are, or investments that are based in the United States. Now, I heard this quote from a very a smart person, a lot smarter than me, and he was talking about the world being a very small place these days economically. And, oh, it is so true. It is so true. Here's a quote from Forbes. 65% by value of the parts in the Ford Mustang come from the United States and Canada. 90% of the parts in the Toyota Sienna, which is built in Indiana, folks, come from the United States and Canada. Now, which is the more American car? Whoa, how can you get more American than a Ford Mustang? Buy a Toyota Sienna. It's so bizarre. Where is the largest automobile manufacturing plant in the United States? It's in South Carolina. And who owns it? A BMW. You know, big money wasters. I was down in Mexico a few years ago, and I was just loving it. I was looking at it. People thought I was crazy, but every time I entered a store, I would look at where everything was made. You know, made in the United States. A lot of stuff was made in the United States. And I was watching, and there were Chevys and Fords and Dodges, and they were all built in Mexico. And there were Toyotas and Hondas, and they were all built in the United States. Yeah, figure that one out. And then I used a shampoo that was made in Canada. Slide number 9. So with that in mind, let's take a look at these very famous brand names on slide number 9 and try to guess where they are based. Are they based domestically, or are they based outside the United States? Are they domestic or foreign, or domestic or international? And Budweiser, Mother Bud. How can you get more American than Budweiser? Well, actually, it's not based in America anymore. It's now part of InBev, which, believe it or not, is a Belgian-Brazilian conglomerate. Yeah, there was a... This was in 2008. There was a little bit of angst and weeping and gnashing of teeth when this company bought Budweiser back in 2008, because they said, how could you sell Budweiser to a foreign company? Well, we believe in capitalism. We believe in free markets. How about Shell Oil? Is that based here? No, it's actually foreign. It's part of Royal Dutch Petroleum, which is a company that has been called a country unto itself. They basically own the country of Nigeria. And Royal Dutch Petroleum is an Anglo-Dutch consortium. It's a company that was based in both in England and the Netherlands. But, as we said, they own a bunch of Houston, too, folks. They're in the United States in big time. How about Ben & Jerry's ice cream? Well, that's foreign also. Yeah, that in Vermont there was again weeping and gnashing of teeth when a foreign company bought Ben & Jerry's. But Farmers Insurance, based in Los Angeles, not anymore. Now it's based in Switzerland. How about Arco? AMPM, it's part of British Petroleum. In fact, they were making the switch. You saw Arco, a BP company, on all the signs outside the Arcos. And then after the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, they took down the they took down the BP company. I think they're bringing it back. How about Gerber Food? Well, that's foreign. Carnation is foreign. Cup of Soup is foreign. Fox Network. They wave the American flag and they talk about all those liberals who hate America, and yet they're based outside the United States. Figure that one out. Seagram's. Excuse me. They're based in Canada. Bayer Aspirin. They're based in Germany, right? Vaseline. That's a UK company. Friskies is now French. So is Motel 6. Union Bank is a Japanese company. Now, Volvo and Saab would be the two companies that you would think would be foreign, right? Well, for many years, they were actually based here in the United States. Yes, Volvo was owned by Ford, and Saab was owned by GM, but not anymore. Volvo is now owned by a Chinese company, and Saab is probably going to go down the porcelain oasis because they couldn't find a buyer for Saab. And there was a small company, I think based in the Netherlands or Denmark, called Stryker. I'm not much of a motorhead. I don't follow the automobile industry that much, but a very small, I think they build very specialized sports cars. If any of you know, enlighten us. But right. So you understand, folks, the world is global, for good or ill. We can't go back, and we in the United States tend to be very nervous when we see these things happening. But in reality, in my humble opinion, we should be gladdened. We want everybody to be more like us, don't we? And here we see more and more countries and more companies embracing free enterprise and investments. And so we should be happy that this is happening. And most importantly, now it's not a guarantee, but when you have operations and businesses that are in a certain country, do you want to go to war with that country? Do you want to bomb your customers and your vendors and your clients and your... No. Yeah, I'm optimistic, as I said. And the pessimists say, well, you're just not being realistic. You don't have all the facts. Slide number 10. Speaking of global investing, here are the top 18 countries according to per capita income in alphabetical order. And this data is from, 73 to 2009, I think it is. Yeah, 73-2009. Which country had the best average annual return over the past quarter century? which country do you think it was? Well, let's take a look. Sweden! Sweden with the... Sweden? Netherlands? Denmark? Switzerland? France? Those socialist countries would have universal health care? Yeah, it's kind of strange, huh? Look at the bottom. Japan, Singapore, Italy, what's going on in these countries? Well, these countries have very low birth rates. Yeah, and it's very kind of hard to grow an economy when your population base is shrinking. Yeah. In fact, in some of these countries, they will pay women to have babies. Go ahead, come on, we'll pay you. We want you to have more babies. And look at the United States, it's about in the middle, right? It's about in the middle, and Canada very close to us. Remember, we're a very large, in fact, the largest economy. So 9% growth, that's pretty good for our stock market. But with economies that are growing quickly, you will often see the average annual rate of return very high. We're not even including the developing markets, and they have been much higher over the last 30 years than the developing world. But, as we're going to see, they're a whole lot more volatile, meaning they go up and down much more. So, still, 9.5% is pretty good as far as I'm concerned. Slide number 11. Now, we also categorize investments into time horizon. And this is the most important decision and characteristic that you as an individual investor must keep in mind. What is your time horizon? When do you need the money? Now, the industry guidelines are, as we see here on the top of the slide number 11, short-term investments are considered up to a year. Intermediate term, 2 to 5 years, and long-term is considered anything 5 or more years. I take a little longer view. I like to think of short-term as 1, 2, maybe even 3 years, but usually not, depending on the individual. Intermediate to me is 3 to 5, maybe even 6 or 7. An intermediate goal in my book is, in my opinion, is a down payment on a house. And these days, it takes a good 5, 6, 7 years to build up a down payment fund. So, it's not necessarily long term. And for me, long term is 10, 20, 30 years. And the biggest long term investment for most individuals will be their retirement fund. Because it's up to you, folks. It's up to you more and more to fund your own retirement. Right. Companies don't want anything to do with it anymore. They'll give you a 401k, match your contributions, and say you're on your own, kiddo. Slide number 12. Another important distinction that we always must look at when we look at investments is the liquidity. Huh? How much beer you have for the week? No, not that kind of liquidity. Whether or not you can easily convert your investment into cash. And liquid investments are easily and quickly converted into cash. There is a ready market to purchase the investment, and change of ownership happens quickly. Boom. You want to get rid of your 100 shares of McDonald's? Somebody out there wants to buy them, folks. And boom, now you don't even talk to the broker anymore. You just put in the order on your computer, and they're gone. Bonds, mutual funds, REITs, these are all highly liquid investments. Now, what are illiquid investments? Well, the poster child for illiquid investments is real estate. Yes, does change happen quickly when you buy or sell a property? No. Is it always easy to sell the property? No. Sometimes it's downright difficult, and sometimes it's pretty darn easy. Partnerships can also have problems with liquidity and collectibles, Beanie Babies and baseball card collections. You have to sometimes wait a while to find the right buyer for your investment. And then the most important overarching that will color all our investment decisions is risk versus return. risk versus reward. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? Risk is the chance that the actual investment returns will differ from your expected returns. What is the typical definition of risk? Well, the possibility of suffering harm or loss or danger. But guess what? That's not what we use in the financial industry. We will spend a good deal of time discussing this, but we use a very different measurement of risk. Why? Because it's difficult to measure risk. It's not easy. In fact, there's no good describing risk. It's very difficult to put a number on it. In general, the higher the expectation of investment returns, the more risk you're going to take, the higher the risk level. And these are my guidelines. The book is a little bit more liberal, a little bit more relaxed with their view. But I consider low risk 3 to 5%, 2 to 5%, anything less than 4 or 5%. Normally. Again, these are general guidelines. Moderate risk is 4, 5 to 8%. And then high risk, anything above 8 to 12%. And people think that's a little too high, but nowadays now they're thinking, that's a little too low, Paiano. And then anything greater than 12%, folks, is speculation. And as we said, many people, myself included, do not consider speculation investing. It is just, it's gambling. And I don't care how you couch it, how you sugarcoat it, you are rolling the dice. You are hoping that things turn out great, and they just might do so. And congratulations, good luck to you, I wish you success. But there's always the chance, and the more you want, the bigger the chance gets, that you could fall down and go boom, and not be happy. So we'll discuss this in detail as we move through the semester. So, with these categories, and I want you to learn this stuff, folks. I want you to memorize this so that if I call you up at 2 o'clock in the morning and ask you the difference between liquidity and illiquidity, you can say, oh yeah, liquidity is the ability to easily convert your investment into cash. Now, you don't have to use my words. You can use, you know, your words, paraphrase it, but still, you need to know this. Why? Because if you don't, and you get in a room with a bunch of other investors and start going, nah, 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 they're going to say, where did you take Introduction to Investments? At Southwestern Community College with Professor Paiano? Well, he's a goofball if he didn't teach you these things. You see, I'm worried about me. I'm worried about me. No, I'm worried about you, too. So now, armed with these definitions, let's take a look at slide 14, and let's try some examples. What type of investment is a Bank of America passbook savings? They don't use the term passbook anymore. My understanding is still some banks do give you a little passbook that looks like a passport. But a savings account at Bank of America, is it a security or is it a property? Now what's a financial investment? Right, it's a security. It's a financial investment. Is it debt or equity? Believe it or not, it is debt. Huh? You are lending your money to Bank of America, and they promise to pay you interest and repay the debt. So you are lending your money. You're a loaner. Is it direct or indirect? Well, your name will be on that passbook savings account, whether electronic or on an actual little passbook. Is it domestic or foreign? Yes, Bank of America is based in the United States. Where is it based, by the way? North Carolina, right? Kind of bizarre, huh? Short term, intermediate term, or long term? Well, as we're going to see, savings accounts are short term, folks. There are some people who put their money into savings accounts for the long term. They haven't taken Business 123. Or they're really frightened. They want to eat. They want to sleep well. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Folks, it's about as low as you can get. Exactly. The banks are guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. There's an agency, or the government itself stands behind the banks up to $250,000. Is it liquid or illiquid? Oh, very liquid, folks. You walk into your Bank of America and say, I want my money. They will give it to you. Now, they'll want to give it to you as a check. If you ask for it in cash, they may have the money. They may not. They might say, oh, you need to come back tomorrow. And if you do that, if you ask for your $13,000 or $25,000, they may wind up calling the FBI and reporting a suspicious transaction. It's the Patriot Act, folks. It's your money. Anyway, Nestle food. Nestle's. N-E-S-T-L-E-S. You guys don't remember that song. I'm old. Nestle's food. The world's largest food company is Nestle Foods. Is it a security or property? It's a security. It's a financial investment. You're buying the stock of Nestle Foods. Is it debt or is it equity? It's equity. You're part owner of the company when you buy their stock. Is it direct or indirect? Well, it will be direct. Your name will be on the account. It used to be your name was on the certificate, but they don't use those anymore. Is it domestic or foreign? Nestle? Where is it based? Switzerland! But wait a minute. Nestle, like Royal Dutch Petroleum, and like many of the multinational corporations which have their roots all over the world, are companies which are countries unto themselves. But sure, it's a foreign-based company, but yeah. Is it short-term, intermediate, or long-term? Well, as we're going to see, stocks in general should be considered long-term, meaning you're going to hold them for 5 years or so. But in the case of Nestle, yeah, you could consider it an intermediate term because it's not going anywhere. That doesn't mean it won't lose value, and it might lose a lot of value, as stocks can do, but it's a good intermediate as well as long-term investment. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Well, again, with stocks, we normally consider them high risk, but in the case of Nestle's, we'll make an exception and bump it down to moderate. Now, would we say it's low risk? I wouldn't. I don't care how important Nestle is to the global economy and how far the roots, they've dug their roots into the world's economy. Stocks in general are pretty high risky, and so let's not put them into low risk. But that's up to you. You have to decide that. Are they liquid or illiquid? Oh boy, yeah. Somebody wants to buy your Nestle shares. Very, very liquid. Now, Southwestern College propositions AA and R bonds. What are we talking about here? You've heard of Southwestern College, haven't you? Yes, you have. And bonds are loans. So what's going on here? Southwestern College needed cash. We needed cash to fix up the campus, which was about 50 years old. Many of the buildings were over 40 years old. This was not quite 10 years ago. And then we also wanted to build out the corner lot at Otay Lakes Road and H Street and turn it into a world-class whatever or not. And we needed cash. You know, we're not going to raise that kind of money with a bake sale. And so we went to the voters of the South Bay and said, hey, we're Southwestern Community College. We need cash. Will you allow us to borrow the money? Meaning you have to pay it back over the long term through your property taxes. And the voters in both cases said, yes, we value Southwestern Community College. Thank you very much, voters of the South Bay. And now we issued loans called bonds and have to pay those bonds back over the next 10, 20, 30 years. And we get the money from the property taxes. So investors, mostly in the California area, state, but not everywhere, can buy those bonds and be paid interest and paid back their principal. So is that a security, or are those securities, or are those properties? Those are securities. They are bonds, so they are financial investments. They represent debt or equity. So are they debt or equity? Well, in this case, they are debt. Right. You, as an investor, when you buy a Proposition AA or a Proposition R bond, are lending your money to Southwestern Community College, and Southwestern's paying you interest and paying the principal back. Is it direct or indirect? It's direct. Your name is on the account, which owns the bonds, And it used to be that you used to get a document that was the bond, but you don't, that doesn't happen anymore. Domestic or foreign, yes, I know some people call us Tijuana Tech, but folks, there is an Instituto Tecnológico de Tijuana, right? We're not Tijuana Tech. We're based in Chula Vista, so we're still domestic. Is it short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Well, I wouldn't call them short-term, but bonds can be considered intermediate or long-term. Some people look at them in the short-term, but bonds in general are intermediate, good intermediate to long-term investments. Are they low, moderate, or high risk? They're certainly not high risk. It's not as though our property here in the South Bay, we've had some rough patches the last few years, everybody has, but it's not as though San Diego County is becoming less desirable to live in, so people are going to be paying their property taxes. So we could consider it fairly low, moderate, fairly low. Now, what we're going to learn later on, when it comes to bonds, we have to take a look at interest rates, and that also affects our decision about whether it is a high risk or a low risk or a moderate risk investment. But they're fairly low. Southwestern College will pay its debts, but we will pay our debts. And then, are they liquid or illiquid? Bonds are fairly liquid, fairly. Sometimes there's a little bit of illiquidity, but not because they're not desirable. It's just that when people buy their bonds, they tend to hold on to them. The trading in bonds is not as great in existing bonds as it is with stocks, where people are buying and selling and buying and selling all the time. People tend to buy their stocks, their bonds, and just collect the interest and then get back the principal. But that doesn't mean they don't trade. They do, and you can buy them, and so they're out there, and you can sell yours once you've bought it. Now, our next investment is a duplex in Spring Valley. You rent one, live in the other. What do you think, folks? Is it a security, or is it right, it's real estate. It's a property. It's a hard asset, sometimes called a real asset. Is it debt or equity? Well, it's equity. Yeah, you own it, and you're renting out one of the sides of the duplex, and you're living in the other one. Is it direct or indirect? Your name is on the title. You go down to the county admin building, and there your name is on that property. Is it domestic or foreign? Yeah, and is Spring Valley still in the United States, folks? Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Now, in my humble opinion, real estate should always be considered a long-term investment. And this is what happened during the real estate bubble of the 2000s. People started to think of these things as short-term investments. I'll buy a property, and 6 months later, 9 months later, I'll sell it and buy something else and make a ton of money and just keep playing this game. Well, guess what? It didn't last, and we know what happened. It was a horrible bubble and a horrible crash afterwards. So I consider it a long-term investment. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Well, in 2005, I would have considered it a very, very high risk, folks. I was very terrified personally, and I would tell people, I don't know. I have a hard time believing that condo in San Isidro that sold for $80,000 in 1998 and is now selling for $320,000 in 2006, I have a hard time believing that in 4, 5, 8 years it's going to be worth $1.8 million. That beautiful house in Eastlake, don't get me wrong, gorgeous house, but it sold for $300,000 in the year 2000, and then sold for $900,000 in the year 2005 and 6 and 7. No. I thought it was very high risk. Now, with prices fallen as far as they have, I would consider it fairly low risk if you have a long-term time horizon. Could they be lower, the prices next year? Yeah, they could be. They seem to have firmed up the end of 2012, but sure, we could have another down leg of the real estate market. Why? Because there are still many, many properties that are going to go through foreclosure, and that's the enemy of prices when you have excess inventory. In other words, there's too much supply and not enough demand. You students of economics know what happens. The price falls. Is it liquid or illiquid? Well, real estate should be considered illiquid, folks. It takes time to convert your investment into cash. In 2004 and 2005, you put up the for sale sign on a Thursday afternoon, and by Saturday, you got 5 to 10 offers. That's not happening now, folks. No, 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 no. Now, what about Qualcomm? It's a stadium, right? It's a stadium, yeah. But more importantly, it's a company based here in San Diego. It's one of our largest employers here in San Diego. And by the way, it's supposed to be all uppercase, but I have a real difficult time spelling it like that. But that's supposedly what it is. When you buy Qualcomm stock, what are you buying? A security or property? Right, it's a security. It's a stock. It's a financial investment. Is it debt or equity? It's equity. You are owning a piece of the company. Is it direct or indirect? It's direct. Your name is on the account, which holds the stock. Is it domestic or foreign? Well, it's based here in San Diego, so it's domestic, but guess what? Right, they make most of their money outside the United States. Figure that one out. Short term, intermediate term, or long term? In the case of stocks, my humble opinion, they should always be considered long term. But there are people who buy and sell Qualcomm stock as if it were, they were called day traders. Oh boy, that's not my idea of a great way to invest, folks. And it's not investing, isn't it? It's speculating. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Well, in general, stocks are considered high risk, and Qualcomm being a tech company, what does Qualcomm make anyway, folks? People say, well, they make cell phones. No, they haven't made cell phones in a long time. Well, they make chips. No, they don't even make the chips. They make the system. Somebody else makes them for them. They make the system called CDMA that all Verizon and Sprint phones use. The competitor is Nokia, by the way, GSM. That's run, who uses those? AT&T and T-Mobile, they use GSM. And so Qualcomm has been moving this CDMA, upgrading it and moving it all around the world. And supposedly they're doing pretty good. I haven't followed them as much, but I was in an old investment club and we bought Qualcomm. We did very well with that stock. Is it liquid or illiquid? Very liquid. Yeah, there's a ready market for your stock. Somebody wants to buy your stock. Now, our last example is a loan to Uncle Harry. Every family has an Uncle Harry. Tio Lucas, cousin Benny, you give money to Uncle Harry, you give. You don't loan money to him. Yeah, the security or property? Well, it's a security. It's not very secure, but it's a financial investment. Is it debt or equity? It's debt. You're lending him the money with the anticipation that he'll pay it back to you. Direct or indirect? Well, yeah, you're the sucker. I mean, you're the designated family member who has to help Harry this time. Is it domestic or foreign? Well, so far until he sends you a postcard from Puerto, well, it's still the United States, but from Argentina or whatever. Short term, intermediate term, long term, or maybe forever. Yeah, you're not going to get your money back. Yeah, low, moderate, very high risk. Liquid or illiquid, nobody's going to buy your debt from you. Yeah, you got the hot potato. So what do you think, folks? What do you think? Is investing really that hard? The short answer is no. In fact, Warren Buffett is very fond of saying investing is simple, but it ain't easy. And we're going to see why it ain't easy as we go along. But in reality, there is far too much hype and jargon and people who act like they know a whole lot more than you do, and they don't really know that much more, but they know enough to make it seem like they know a lot more. You will find that investing is, on the surface, fairly simple. But in many ways, we're going to look at it like an onion. So I don't know if this analogy works, but think about it. When you peel back the layers and get closer and closer to the core of the onion, we're going to do that. We're going to start at the very surface and make sure you understand all the things that are in this presentation. Go back and do it over again, listen to it again, watch it over again, read it over again, write down your notes. That's all I want you to know for now. And then next time, we'll peel another layer off. Is that a deal? Okay, good. Because in our next presentation, we are going to fly a little closer to the landscape, and we're going to peel back the next layer and take a look at an overview of investments. Thank you so much for being in our class, folks. We really are very grateful you're here, and we want you to succeed. See you in our next session on an overview of investment types.